well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Apologies for yesterday. I'm having some work done around the house, and between the sounds of the chainsaw and the Bearcats, there was just no way that I could actually do a show. So things are a little bit quieter here on the 40 acres today, and very pleased to have Kariana Clare join us from Gun Owners Action League here in just a moment or two. Going to be talking about an event that is happening 1 month from today, April 19th. If you are a history dork like I am, you know what the 250th anniversary is going to be on April 19th, right? The Battle of Lexington and Concord and the Gun Owners Action League in Massachusetts. Well, they are commemorating that event in a very big way, including a blockbuster dinner that's going to be held in Boxborough, Massachusetts on the afternoon and evening of April 19th. I am very pleased that I will be in attendance there, but there are going to be a lot of other folks, names that you will recognize, and you can be a part of this. So I wanted to invite Kariana on the show to talk about this event, how you can be a part of it, and what to expect, as well as some of the other activities that the Gun Owners Action League is going to be putting on April 19th, 2025. Take a look and a listen. Kariana, thanks so much for coming on the program. It is good to see you again.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in person 1 month from today on April 19th. This is really exciting. The Gun Owners Action League, the Battle Continues Dinner. Now, this is one of several events that the Gun Owners Action League is putting on in conjunction with the 250th anniversary of Lexington and Concord, right?
Yeah, we got, so in the morning we have the, so we're going to be at the Patriots Battlefield early in the morning. So like 5:30 a.m. they're going to do the reenactment. Yeah, it's going to be a long day. And there's going to be a 111th 5 mile race that Colonel West is going to be in. So, there's a lot going on. We can't be there for everything, but we're going to be there for a majority of it. So, and in the beginning, the Civil Rights Coalition, Toby Larry and myself, Goal, we're going to be there. We're going to do a show, a recording, and then we're going to separate and do some interviews with the crowd and then come back, do a press conference, and then off to the race we go. So off to the next event.
And so I'm flying in on that Saturday. So I will not be there at 5:30 in the morning, unfortunately, but I will be at the Boxborough Regency Hotel and Conference Center on Saturday, April 19th for the 250th anniversary dinner. Right. The Battle Continues, commemorating 250 years of liberty. Apologies, by the way, for the lawnmower I have going on in the background. If you can hear that.
OK.
The battle against weeds continues at my place. And I got to say, I mean, this is a fantastic event. When I was invited to take part, anytime that I can, join up with the Gun Owners Action League to advance the cause of liberty, I'm going to say yes. But I mean, you guys have, I got to say, I just feel so honored to be included among the folks who are going to be there speaking. You've got Jared Yanis, who's going to be there, Doug Hamlin, NRA's executive vice president, Dick Heller, obviously of DC versus Heller versus DC, Toby Leary, you mentioned, of the Civil Rights Coalition, Colonel Alan West, Adam Kraut, the executive director of the Second Amendment Foundation. So this is, some of the, the folks who are on the front lines of preserving and clawing back our freedoms in those states like Massachusetts, where so much of our right to keep and bear arms has been lost.
It's so true. It's so true. It's going to be amazing to be in the same room with a bunch of patriots and be able to fight the fight, because we can't do this alone, and we have to remind ourselves every single day that even though this law passed, we can't give up. We still have to fight, especially for our sister states too, because it trickles, if it's happening here, it's going to happen to another state. So I think this is a good reminder. I know that a lot of folks kind of gave up and threw their hands up in the air when the law passed, and they're like, I can't believe this is happening. I'm moving. And a lot of people did move. A lot of people moved out of state, but for myself, I can't move, and I refuse to move. I'm going to stay here and I'm going to fight. And the battle continues. So it's just, it's a great reminder, but it's also a really awesome opportunity to have patriots like yourself And people come to the event to actually get to meet you all and understand what you are doing to fight the fight. So there's a lot going on.
There is. And, you know, I was born in Massachusetts. I did not choose to leave. My dad took a job in Oklahoma when I was two. I still have family in Massachusetts. That state is very near and dear to my heart. Obviously, I have a lot of friends in Massachusetts. And, you know, it does break my heart, Carrie, to see what has happened in that state, because you look at the attitudes and you look at what people were fighting for 250 years ago, right? Even before those shots were fired at Lexington and Concord, the committees of correspondence that sprang up in response to the intolerable acts that were put in place by the British Parliament, this idea of we're going to, put you under our heel, basically, until you accept that we are in charge, you don't get a say, right?
Right.
We do see that same attitude at work, unfortunately, in Massachusetts right now, with a legislature that is dominated by Democrats, a state government that, frankly, is dominated by one party. And particularly when it comes to gun owners, you are essentially told you will shut up, you will obey. And if you don't obey some of these unobeyable edicts,
right,
then you will be a criminal, right?
Right. And there's so much in the bill that I guarantee there's people right now that are probably don't even realize that they're a criminal according to this law. And it infuriates me, because we're not the bad guys. We are law abiding citizens, and being part of Gun Owners Action League and being part of the Well-Armed Women and Armed Women of America, we create safer communities. People like yourself that speak out and protect our civil rights, we create safer communities. Not throwing these legislations, these laws, these bills at us. It's ridiculous. So I don't know. I don't know. I'm just going to keep on fighting.
Absolutely. And, you know, I talk about those committees of correspondence. I mean, that was an opportunity for individuals, like-minded patriots, to get together, not only in their own local communities, but again, to, share information and tactics with like-minded individuals all across the colonies back then. Right. So
right.
I know that you're going to have a lot of Massachusetts residents there, but I hope that you will actually have people traveling from out of state. Beyond myself, and some of your speakers to actually show up at the dinner. And by the way, if you want information about how you can get tickets, go to gold.org/250dinner. And there are a lot of different tiers, right? So you can buy a general admission ticket. You've got the preferred seating, the Old North Church seating, and you can even decide, you know what, I want to sit at Alan West's table. I want to sit at Toby Leary's table. I want to sit at Cam Edwards' table. And you can buy tickets for those specific tables as well. Let me ask, where is this money going to go, Carrie Ann?
So I'm glad you're asking that. So there is a live auction that we're doing in the middle of the event. And there is a muzzleloader that is a very special muzzleloader. And all the proceeds for that will go back to the Civil Rights Coalition so they can fight their fight. Because we were successful in the petition. So we did get it on the ballot. We were successful in the petition. We would have been able to stall this. But, as you know, Maura Healey did an emergency preamble because there was an emergency, which I still don't understand.
Yeah, she, so, you know, I'm sorry, I got to interrupt there. But yeah, she signs this emergency preamble, supposedly putting the law into effect immediately, right? And then massive amounts of the law is suspended, in some cases up to 18 months, because the state clearly wasn't ready for this, right? So, yeah. So what was the emergency? Well, the emergency was, if she didn't do that, then the law would have been halted until the residents of Massachusetts had a chance to vote on this measure in 2026. And she could not allow that to happen.
Right. She knew what was going to happen, and she just stalled it. She stopped it. And so we were successful to get it on the ballot for 2026 as a question. So now, you know, the Civil Rights Coalition, their whole mission now is to gather, material, mailings and everything else they got to do to pass the message around to everybody, non-gun owners and gun owners alike, because this is a civil rights issue. This is a process matters issue. There's going to be a lot of work, a lot of work that we have to do. And then, of course, all the money and the proceeds for the rest of the event will go back into goal so we can fight the fight. And as you know, anytime we pass any type of bill or law, it costs, or have a lawsuit, it costs a lot of money. So, and you never know what we're going to have to do to help someone else within the Commonwealth because of this law. Like maybe something happens and all of a sudden now they're in trouble because this stupid law. So there's a lot to do and, you know, a lot of work.
Absolutely. And the gun owners actually is a part of the lawsuit that, in fact, I think they were the first ones to file along with the NRA, I believe, to sue over these provisions in Chapter 135. Now, the state, again, has put a lot of these provisions on hold, but that doesn't negate the lawsuit, right? The lawsuit is still ongoing and it's going to continue to go on. Once these measures take effect, then obviously, even if a judge right now says, listen, you know, this isn't ripe for litigation. Well, as soon as that law takes effect, boom, this lawsuit is going to proceed. And, you know, the attorneys are already working hard developing this case. And, you know, and you talk about the amount of money that goes into this. I know that I don't think any Second Amendment attorney joins the fight with the idea of I'm going to get filthy rich. Right.
Right.
But you look, they got to put groceries on the table. They got to pay the electric bill, right? Yeah. So even if they are, you know, giving folks a reasonable hourly rate for their legal services, it still adds up because you're talking about hundreds, if not thousands of hours of research, of writing opinions, of writing briefs, not opinions, but writing briefs and requests. Yeah. That takes time and that does take money. So to bring a case from district court all the way up to the Supreme Court can cost $1 million or more. Yeah. I mean, that's just a fact of life.
Isn't it right that if it goes to the Supreme Court, that they're not even, we're not even guaranteed that they're going to take it?
Yeah.
So all that money, time and efforts, pain and sweat and tears, you know, and, you know, going back to the attorneys, they have a crew, they have a team that's working with them. So that goes into that too. But, they did an extension for the training aspect of this. The training aspect, the state has no idea. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do as a, you know, instructor. I'm looking at this right now going, okay, so I can do a class, provide live fire, suicide prevention. Okay. De-escalation tactics, live fire, a completed written exam, injury prevention. And then I can't provide you the certificate. I have to give it to the state. And then the state now will be providing the student with the certificate.
And the state has not provided you with a curriculum, right? They've told you what you have to teach, but they haven't said, here's how you teach it. Here's the material you have to use. That supposedly is coming, right? Then you've got the deadline for the all of the edicts that FFLs have to go through. In terms of, you know, and manufacturers, quite frankly, to have firearms tested, to be approved for sale in Massachusetts. That's a whole issue in and of itself. And then all of the additional, you know, training and paperworking requirements for the FFLs that, again, have been established by the law, but the specifics have not been set up by the state police. I mean, this really is a nightmare. It was a nightmare in how they passed this with such little public input. It was a nightmare. All the legislative games that they played to bring this to the floor, pulling the bill like repeatedly. Right. I think the bill had like, what, four different bill numbers at one point in the House?
Six. It started at HD 4420, ended at H4885, and then boom, Chapter 135. And I'm like, how do I remember all these things?
Right. Yeah.
But to go back to the training aspect, it's, in my opinion, is discriminating because you know that as an instructor, this is going to be a lot more money for me. I have no choice but to charge more money for a student. So how is it, they're making it to the point where people are just throwing up their hands and saying, forget it. I'm not going through all that. So, you know,
which by the way, that's a feature. That's not a bug. That's the intent, right? Is to make it so difficult. And once you get that permit, once you get that Second Amendment permission slip, again, there are so many rules in place that it's so easy to slip up that not only is it, you know, the barrier to entry, but there's the barrier of exercising your right, because if you screw up, you can get prosecuted, right? And, you know, all it takes is one overzealous anti-gun prosecutor to decide we're going to make an example out of you.
Yes, exactly.
And your life's ruined.
And in the meantime, you know, you got these individuals that have illegal firearm charges on them. They get dropped because they want to get some more information from them. Then they get put back out on the street again and they get another illegal firearm. And it's this vicious cycle. So when they're sitting there trying to make safer communities, well, then let's talk about that.
Right?
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. And you know what? And if they did talk about that, they would find allies in the Second Amendment community.
Right.
That's the thing. There are areas of agreement. Right. As long as we're not talking about infringing on our rights, as long as we're not talking about criminalizing mm-hmm. our right to keep and bear arms, I think there are absolutely things that we could agree on with even gun control advocates. There are violence prevention programs that I think are proven effective, that don't involve putting new laws on the books. They don't involve putting people in jail for exercising a civil right. I'm all in favor of those things.
Yeah.
But
have firearm education in the schools.
Yes.
Way back in the
right.
day, they used to do that. So why are they taking that out? Because you can prevent so much, and just the education alone is really what we need. It's education, not legislation. And I know we're all getting revved up.
Well, listen, I mean, there's a reason why they don't work with gun owners. There's a reason right. why you don't have a seat at the table. It's because ultimately, at the end of the day, they're not interested in education.
Right.
They're not interested in doing anything that quite possibly would encourage somebody to exercise their Second Amendment rights when they're trying to shut that down. So here, I think, again, is a perfect opportunity to advance the cause of liberty and freedom, to get a chance to know your fellow gun owners. If you live in Massachusetts, you're going to meet a lot of great folks who live near you. If you live out of state, you're going to get a chance to spend some time with folks who really are on the front lines of freedom.
Exactly.
And again, it's a perfect opportunity to celebrate what I think is one of the most important days in American history as well, the 250th anniversary of Lexington and Concord. It's coming up again, April 19th. Now, the cocktail hour starts at 4 p.m. at the Boxborough
Regency Hotel.
Thank you. And Convention Center, yes. And then the event begins at 5 p.m. The attire is, by the way, business casual, which I'm very happy to hear because I don't have business formal attire living on a farm. And again, you can find out more information at gold.org/250dinner. Carrie Ann, you're going to be the master of ceremonies that night, right?
I am. I'm very excited about that. So I'm representing the ladies.
Nice.
But well, I also want to mention too, because some people may not, and it's okay if you don't know all the speakers, if you go to the Gun Owners Action League and click on each speaker, it brings you to their website so you can learn more about every single person that's coming in to speak. Because, you know, at one point in time in my life, when I became a gun owner, I didn't know everybody. And now I do. So, and this is an amazing opportunity to say, hey, I can't miss this event. This is a one in a lifetime event that you cannot miss.
Hey.
We need to remember how hard we fought. Get that back into our minds, our heart and soul, and continue the effort with everybody united. That's it.
Absolutely. And by the way, Alan West table is already sold out, mm-hmm. the Concord Command table. So if you want to sit with Dick Heller at the John Adams table, you can do that. There are seats available for my table, the Paul Revere table.
I
was very pleased that you guys put me at the Paul Revere table. Adam Krause at the Minuteman table, Doug Hamlin at the Patriot table, Toby Leary at the Midnight Ride table, Jim Wallace of the Gunners Action League at the Captain John Parker table, Jared Yannis at Ben Franklin table. So again, you've got a great opportunity to spend some time with just really some great folks, not only the folks from the Gun Owners Action League, but again, from all around the country. I would strongly encourage you to get up to Boxborough, Massachusetts on April 19th. And again, to learn more about it, gold.org/250dinner. Carrie Ann Claire, I am looking forward
Thank
to seeing you in a month in person.
So looking forward to it. I can't wait to meet you in person finally.
I know. Well, just weeks away. And thank you so much again for coming on the show today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
My thanks to Carrie Ann for joining me on the program. And I hope that I do get to see you in Boxborough. This is one of those events. Yeah, I know it's tough for people to travel sometimes. Believe me, I'm well aware of that. But this is one of those events I think people are going to be talking about for years to come. And again, as a history nerd, to be in Lexington and Concord, to be in that area on the 250th anniversary, I mean, that's pretty special, right? And there are going to be a lot of, what is it? It's not the sesquicentennial, is it? But there are going to be a lot of events, you know, over the next few years commemorating the 250th anniversary of all kinds of events that took place during the War of Independence, including, I think, Independence Day 2026. Boy, that's going to be a huge celebration all across the nation. But this is really kicking things off. And again, if you want more information, just go to gold.org/250dinner. And hopefully I'll see you in Massachusetts 1 month from today. All right, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there. not a true recidivist report. In fact, I don't believe this individual has been in trouble with the law before, which may explain the relatively light sentence that he received for shooting a delivery driver who showed up at his doorstep last month. This was in Pennsylvania, Lackawanna County, I believe. Nicholas Sabo sentenced last Friday to 6 months in jail, 4.5 years of probation, after shooting a delivery driver who was delivering groceries to his home in Newton Township back in January. He pleaded guilty to one count of aggravated assault in the incident. This started apparently because of a lack of communication between Sabo and his wife. According to the criminal complaint that was filed, officers responded to the Sabo's home a little bit after 7:30 back on, I believe it was January 20th, for a report of a delivery driver who had been shot in the leg. They found 35-year-old Jerry Whitcomb in his vehicle where he had fled after being shot. He was transported to a local hospital where he went directly into surgery. Back at the home, officers were met by Mr. Sabo's wife, who they described as being in a, quote, panicked state. She invited the police into the house. They found Nicholas Sabo in the kitchen where they asked where his gun was. He pointed to a handgun next to the coffee pot. Vanessa Sabo told officers that she had put in an Instacart order, but she didn't tell her husband. So she got an alert on her phone from a camera on the side of the house, and she told police that she originally believed that someone was trying to break in, and she alerted her husband. Now, that's an issue, right? I mean, if you've placed that order, you know that someone's coming to your home. You know someone's coming to your home because you invited them there to drop off groceries. So why would your first thought be, oh, my God, it's a prowler. Oh, my God, it's a burglar. I understand being concerned about a break-in, but that wouldn't be my first thought. My first thought would be, oh, my groceries are here. So anyway, she told her husband, I think somebody might be trying to break in. So Nicholas Sabo went upstairs. He got his gun. And according to police, that's when he fired it at Wilchcombe. It doesn't sound like he, you know, ask, what are you doing here? Who are you? Get away from my house. Nothing that would have alerted the delivery driver to the fact that there was a concerned homeowner who was armed there, right? It kind of sounded like it was a shoot first, ask questions later incident. He then came back inside the house, according to police, unloaded his gun while Vanessa Sabo called 911. Sabo told officers that, again, his wife had told him someone was trying to break into the home. Police noted that Wilchcombe's wife, Jessica Thomas, her daughter, Olivia Thomas, were with Wilchcombe in the car. They were witnesses to the incident. The wife says that the three were making a delivery, had provided Instacart paperwork verifying the scheduled delivery. He left the car apparently to drop off the groceries and then returned bleeding from the leg. So, yeah, this was unfortunately avoidable. This didn't have to happen. Again, a lack of communication between the Sabos, a leap to conclusions on the part of Vanessa Sabo, and then which I think was aggravated by Nicholas Sabo, again, not even asking, who are you? What are you doing here? Before firing that shot. This didn't need to happen. 4.5 months in jail is not nothing. Excuse me, I'm sorry, it's 4.5 years of probation for this individual. 6 months in jail is not nothing. But I still think that Nicholas Sabo, and frankly his wife too, should be counting the lucky stars that the punishment is not even worse than what it was. And again, for those of us who are gun owners, and I imagine if you're watching or listening to this program, that's you. We have a right to protect ourselves. I would say we have a responsibility to protect ourselves. But again, you have to take into consideration all of the factors that may be involved, right? If you hear a noise outside your house at 2 a.m. and you haven't placed an Instacart order, you haven't ordered anything. I mean, it's not going to be FedEx dropping off a package at 2 o'clock in the morning, right? But again, if you've placed an order, you know someone's coming to your house, and then you hear a noise outside, you see somebody there in the yard, I don't know, maybe at least announce yourself, tell them you're armed. If they haven't presented a threat, and it doesn't sound like Wilczkom had presented a threat, at that point, you're not really in fear of great bodily harm. You don't have a reasonable fear. You may very well be afraid, but you don't have a reasonable fear of death or great bodily injury at that point in time. And if you act as the Sabos did, there are going to be legal consequences. All right, on to today's armed citizen story. This one from Houston, Texas, where a Houston business owner shot a burglary suspect. This was last Friday. Apparently not the first time that the intruder had showed up at this business in Houston. It was at a mechanic shop on West 18th Street early Friday morning. The business owner told KHOU Channel 11 News that the same guy had targeted the shop earlier in the week, stealing copper from an electrical box. He actually provided the TV station with surveillance footage showing a man loading stolen equipment out of the bed of his pickup truck. So the business owner had installed additional cameras with sensors, extra lighting. And then the guy came back apparently early Friday morning. When the business owners were alerted to this, they drove to the scene. They confronted the man. And again, unlike in the story that we just talked about, in this case, the guy did present a threat. According to police, he became aggressive. Don't know exactly what that means, but that's when the shop owner pulled his gun, shot the suspect once in the abdomen, and then held him at gunpoint until police arrived. The business owner said he found out that he doesn't get away with everything. But will it stop him? He looks well-versed in this. Backpacks full of every tool imaginable to do every job imaginable. He said, I don't suspect he's going to be stopping, and unless he's charged harshly and held accountable, he'll be back at it. I mean, I would hope and I would expect that being shot while committing a crime might cause you to rethink your life choices, but we'll see. And we'll try to follow the story and see what, if anything, happens to the burglar in the criminal justice system. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, we'll be able to do the right thing. Some good Samaritans in Camden County, Florida, who came to the aid of a man who fell off his boat in the waters off the coast there. Nassau County Sheriff's Office says the gentleman was struggling to hang on to some rope after he fell into the water. His fishing partner was able to use his phone to call for help back on shore, dialed a friend who came to the scene. Hunter Howell said, when I got there, all I saw was Mr. Seymour hanging onto the boat like this. He said, when I tried to grab him and felt how cold he was, I kind of feared the worst. This gentleman, Mr. Seymour, is in his 70s. He spent nearly an hour in the water before Hunter Howell and deputies there in Nassau County were able to get him back onto a dry boat and then eventually to dry land. Officials, though, say he is expected to be okay, which might not have been the case were it not for these individuals who came to the aid. By the way, so this was Camden County, Florida. It was actually Camden County, Georgia. But I guess it was Nassau County Sheriff's Office in Florida who responded to the scene in the waters there. So a little confusion there. But bottom line is this gentleman is going to be okay, thanks to the quick thinking of a good Samaritan and first responders there in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing to help him out of the water and help him get back to safety. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program. As always, I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow, rain, shine, or chainsaws. We're going to be talking with David Yamane, sociology professor at Wake Forest. I want to talk with David about this study, quote-unquote, from New Jersey. You've probably seen the headlines. We wrote about this, I think it was last week. I guess it was over the weekend. I wrote about this at Bearing Arms, this new study from Rutgers University purporting to show that defensive gun uses are incredibly rare and far more people are exposed to gun violence, quote unquote, than will ever use a firearm in self-defense. There's some real issues with the way this study was put together. In fact, I think there are so many issues with the way the study was put together that it was designed essentially to reach the conclusion that researchers wanted. So we're going to talk about that and more with David Yamane on tomorrow's Bearing Arms Cam & Company. Hope you have a great rest of your hump day Wednesday. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. And again, don't forget, go to gold.org/250dinner. Sign up for that incredible event coming up 1 month from today. And hopefully we'll see you in Massachusetts, but if not, we'll see you back here on Bearing Arms Cam & Company on Thursday. Until then, be well. Be safe and be free.